Okay, good morning. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, June 15, 2022, and this is Class 9 in the series Principles of Self-Healing. Last week discussed extensively about wisdom and discernment and the importance of mind training, actually, in greater healing. Today may be the final class, and it's more reflections on some very much more abstruse or advanced aspects of final healing. And again, what does healing mean? Well, depends on who you talk to, but depends on how far the discussion goes, particularly. Other than physical healing, it's mental, emotional, spiritual, particularly in terms of seven chakra theory, it's the clearance of lower triad blockages by the development of the higher chakras and then balance and coordination. And so healing as making whole one's sense of self, one's personal life expression is the beginning. And so in Buddhism, there's no extended discussion of emotional healing or balance, but rather freedom from harmful tendencies and the development of beneficial qualities or bodhipakyadhamma, the factors of enlightenment in which development of kusala dhamma, or wholesome and helpful, beneficial qualities, kusala dhamma, or qualities in this case, are bodhipakya, meaning tending towards enlightenment, supportive, where healing, you know, where there is personal, emotional, psychological healing, there will be good qualities, the qualities of kindness or generosity or harmlessness and caring for people, caring for self, and then honesty and discernment and reasonability, qualities of love, wisdom. Where there's still wounding, we commonly still manifest harmful tendencies. And so the harmful tendencies are associated with wounding, unhealed. Healing of that goes to helpful qualities. And that's the first level of healing, which is the personal, psychological, emotional going on. Then there's the development of the higher qualities themselves, love, wisdom, green, blue, indigo, chakras, 4, 5, 6. And then we have that balance between lower and higher, not simply being honest and being kind to oneself and knowing oneself well, know yourself, accept yourself, and being no longer being stuck in defense mechanisms, splitting, projection, avoidance, defensiveness, all the other tendencies of being dishonest about oneself. Moving out of that, then there's just the balance of lower, higher, or focus on the physical, emotional, social, relational, and focus on the inner and the spiritual and the transcendent. But beyond all that, there's the healing that goes to realization of true nature. And I had a dream a couple of nights ago that was very odd, and I want to use that as the basis for this discussion today. In what could be called deep levels of mind healing. Now, there's not just deep self-healing, but there's deep mind healing. Deep mind healing is dealing with some very primal or primary phenomena of consciousness that associates with distortion and the whole issue of a desire and thought and knowing. And I want to bring a reference from a movie called Defending Your Life, written by Albert Brooks with Meryl Streep. Very funny movie, but actually a lot of truth there regarding life review after death. And there's a very tiny dialogue between the Albert Brooks, his character, and his lawyer, his representation in a court of heaven in Judgment City, they called it, where he's going through his life in a life review and defending himself. Were you in the morality of being good to others because you really appreciate yourself, or being bad to others or harmful because you're stuck in fear and low self-value? And so there's the linkage between good qualities and bad qualities and wounding or healing. Wounding unhealed, retained wounding, strong fear, low self-value particularly, patterns of anger undergird by sorrow, dejection, self-blame, hopelessness or a sense of self-judgment, leads to harmful tendencies. Being dishonest, being selfish, being insensitive, While the healing of the wounding is done by the development of love wisdom and those qualities of love wisdom, green, blue, fourth chakra, fifth chakra, is the basis of all additional kusala dhamma or bodhipakya dhamma, factors of enlightenment, wholesome tendencies that we ought to keep cultivating. And so he is talking to his lawyer, and I'll read that in a moment after I go through the first part for the dream. And this is recently in the last 6 months I've been having certain dreams that are very sort of the roots of personal psychology. The distortions associated with the very formation of a personal sense of self, to have a personal psychology, to have issues. So there's personal issues of personal psychology, or issues of a personal mind with its personal psychological patterns. But there's the basis of its formation. The basis of its formation itself is a distortion that has to be resolved. Like six density, Ra talking about dropping identity and memory to go to seventh density, your law forever, to basically go beyond subjectivity, to beyond the experience of unity, where unity is based on a certain duality. The experience of unity, we become light, they say, we no longer seek light, is based on the duality of a subject that is identifying a perception. The perception that all is light and I am that one light. We've become light. We now have changed and have now realized or come to this so-called new condition of being light or unity, law of one, sixth density. All of that is dualistic. There's still a subjectivity. There's still a rising perception. There's still an object that the subject is identifying with, called light, all light. We become light, and still an experience of time and space. We become, meaning now we are, but we weren't before. We were seeking light, now we become light. So there's still the dualism of time and space and subject-object and arising perception and phenomenal appearance. That's not the end of the path. Meanwhile, to go from six to seven, there's very fundamental unstructuring or resolution of the very formations of identity. And I've been having certain kind of dreams that were very very abstruse, that I can't even remember very well. And the dream a couple of nights ago was similar to that. It's sort of like a last lifetime, deep mind resolutions of the very basis of distortion, it seems to me. Using the time well to explore, what, 2.1 or something? The distortions, blockages, the very subtle distortions at the beginning of subjectivity. So anyway, the content of the dream was twofold, where there were two things I was trying to do, both of which I couldn't do. One was I was looking through like a database trying to find a file. And I just couldn't find it. And time was limited, and I just couldn't find it, and I just couldn't find it, and I was looking, and I couldn't find it, and I sort of knew I wouldn't be able to find it. And the second part was I had to go out and put on my pants. So I looked for this pants, and it wasn't that one right, and there was another one, and it wasn't really right, and the time was up, and I couldn't find my pants. In both cases, there's a sort of non-resolvability. And when I started to think about it, it's sort of the issue of unmeetable obligations. Obligations to find the file for something, for some information, or a knowing, or put on the pants, or meaning prepare to appear in the world or something, or prepare to go out, which is make a movement and preparing for movement or something, preparing for a transition. In both cases, it was not possible. These were obligations, but they were unmeetable. And for some reason, then very quickly on moving to waking up and getting out of bed, I thought of the word Noel. Now, I never think of that word, Noel. I'm not a Christmas caroler, and I don't know anyone named Noel or anything like that. So what's that? What is this? Well, again, I'll look into the etymology of that word Noel, which I had not known about, meaning I heard the term, you know, Noel, Christmas singing, or Noel Coward or something, but it's not a word that is rarely, I don't know, the last, must have been years and years ago that word was ever in my mind. What's that? Well, that was some kind of that was like an answer to non-resolvability. So at the roots of mind, where there's the very establishing of subjectivity and the very establishing of thought that fashions desire. I want something. I want healing. I'm wounded. The very roots by which we fashion a subjectivity and fashion an experience for that subjectivity. Fashioning experience for the fashion subjectivity. Out of what? Out of I don't know what. Out of intelligent infinity, or out of the pre-subjective condition. Uh-huh. So, unknowability, non-resolvability, irreconcilability. Something couldn't be reconciled. Some obligation couldn't be met. Some problem couldn't be resolved. Something that I needed to know couldn't be known. Making peace with no win. That's weird. In some sense, there is no win or reconciliation or resolution or healing of a fundamental distortion. It's either being fashioned or not, like identity. You either, you know, this is not finished until we leave sixth density or until one is really moving out of non-returner status in Buddhism, third stage awakening, or the yoni experiencing his own death. It's after self-realization, or the yoni experiences his own death. The movement from, some experience of jhana, from jhana to satchit. From jhana to satchit. Jhana as realization, gnosis, self-realization, awareness of unity, or become light, to satchit, which is really the chit of sat, or absolute truth, absolute reality awareness, where there is no subjectivity, there's nothing to be done, there's no desire, thus no resolution of desire and seeking, there's no object, therefore there's no knowing. It's an awareness beyond objective knowing, or knowing of objects. There's no knowing of objects because there's no subject that has an experience that needs to know. Uh-huh. And somehow Noel is in there, or Noel is a principle that helps resolve the irreconcilable, the unresolvable, the you can't resolve a distortion. you can only be, essentially, one has to be free of its basis. And that's Noel. What the heck is Noel? Well, looking all, in Wiktionary on etymology, there are a half dozen pages that are very interesting. The first is the Wiktionary page on Noel. It goes back from to Middle English, from Old French, from Latin. Latin is Natalis, which is the birth of the Lord. So we're talking about sacred birth. And that comes from this Latin Natalis, Natalis, natal. Natalis in Latin, of giving birth or giving birth to the Lord, comes, that Natalis in Latin goes, come from natus. Natus is the perfect, going back further, looking at natus, N-A-T-U-S, perfect active principle of nas cor, I am born. From the older natus, G-N-A-T-U-S, from Proto-Italic, from Proto-Indo-European, the old P-I-E. From notos, produced or given birth, to produce, to give birth, to beget. From gun, natus goes way back to nas cor, given birth, gun. And we go back all the way to reconstructed P-I-E, Proto-Indo-European, to produce, to give birth, to beget. Interesting, it's related to all sorts of Proto-Celtic, some all sorts of other words, but it's associated with a spiritual birth, the birth of light. In some sense, the deepest level of mind that establishes the experience of a subjective mind itself. You can't resolve, you can't find light in the dark. You can only bring light into it. There's no light in the dark, but there's light available to illuminate, and then there's no more dark. Certain matters cannot be resolved, or our resolutions are all temporary and limited and partial anyway. Essentially, the resolution of distortion is the ending of identity. The ending of the maya of aham, of a subjectivity, where the very subjectivity gives rise to desire, gives rise to seeking to know, seeking light, seeking to grow, seeking peace, seeking fulfillment. Oh. Somebody's unmuted there. It's sort of like making peace with no win. The only way to make peace with no win is to realize that no win ends. The ending of no win is the resolution of no win. That this all may be seem strange to you, or you may be think I'm just babbling, or you may get a sense that the deeper levels of mind are the basis of thought and the basis of desire. And so the basis of subjectivity. In Buddhism, you know, there's the idea of the 10 fetters. The first, the 10th, which is in fact the first when we're involved, you know, coming down from logos or intelligent infinity down into matter, down into subjectivity. The first of the 10, or number 10, is avidya, ignorance. Basically taking the impermanent as permanent, taking insubstantial as substantial, taking stressful as stressless. You are not living in a material universe, you're dancing thoughts, Ra said. Taking dancing thoughts to be living in to be a subjectivity, a subjective me identity living in a material universe. That's avidya. The basic avidya, 10th fetter, the last fetter broken on the way out of the octave, is the basis of conceit or subjectivity. It's the basis of tanha, craving, and then clinging, and then attachment, and then rebirth, and all that. It's the basis of desire, the basis, actually, of thinking itself. Before there's desire, there's the capacity to think, to form thought, to generate thought form, to form what? Light into thought? What the heck's happening? So you're not living in a material universe, you're dancing thoughts. Well, it's only at the logoic level that one would return to that awareness that all is dancing thought. Whose thought? The logoic thought. Dancing meaning vibrating in the mind of infinity. Infinity is temporarily fashioning thought, and that appears as creation. Mm-hmm. And so the only, and that's why Noel was in my mind. Totally weird. I mean, very, very radical in the sense of radix and root. The root level issue, I think, here. Birth of our Lord. The birth of the Logos. Or the Logos being born into the dream of a material universe. The birth of the illusory sense of self, which itself is an irreconcilable condition. You can't resolve a self into Godhead or into Source without dropping it. There is no final well-being by desire. There's no final liberation with the current sense of identity. This identity is unfreeable. It has to be just simply moved. We would just simply have to drop it. Its roots have to be cut, or the arising of, you know, desire and paradox, and all the paradoxes resolved and the polarities revealed, you know, paradoxes revealed and polarities come to an end, the law of one. They're not at the end of the path. They need to drop identity and memory, which go together, Ra said, leaving sixth density. But the condition of subjectivity itself is a no-win condition. It Maya is not real, and thus there's no end to it, except it's just not real. There's no end to what's never been real. There's no freedom for one that's never been bound. You can't have freedom where there's never been bondage. This is very weird, this kind of thinking. So somehow that's related to Noel and related to unmeetable obligation, irreconcilability, unresolvability, something that's just not possible, the reality of no win. Where you seek to win, you cannot win. You know, the only way to win is not to play the game, right? That kind of thing. Winning is not achieved by winning. Winning is achieved by no longer having a game to be played or a desire to play the game and win. Winning is the freedom from the desire for winning. Freedom from the experience of seeking to win is the freedom from game playing, is the freedom from losing. You can't lose if you don't play. But you can't win if you don't play. But you can only win in the bigger sense if you don't play, which means you can only win if you don't try to win. Well, you'll never lose if you don't play, but you actually can't win by winning. There's no liberation in the illusory. There's only liberation from the illusory, if you know what I mean. And somehow that relates to Noel, to me, the birth, the essential begetting. The resolution of the unresolvable is a closer union to the essence of the birth of birth, not physical birth, but the birth of light. Returning to the birth of light, one resolves the unresolvable, or wins without playing the game. If you know what I mean. And so then, okay, we go to the movie Defending Your Life, if you're still alive and kicking. So this scene between Albert Brooks and Bob Diamond. Albert Brooks is AB, Bob Diamond is BD, like bondage and domination. And he's a big brain, and he calls Albert Brooks a little brain, and he's very conceited. It's the Rip Torn character or somebody like that. Very cute dialogue. And so what happens is he's gone away for a couple of days, the lawyer, comes back. Just a moment, I have a sip of tea. He goes away for a couple of days. He comes back. The Albert Brooks character, Albert Brooks, says, "Where were you? I'm just curious." And Bob Diamond says, "You wouldn't understand." Albert Brooks says, "Don't treat me like a moron. Try me." And Bob Diamond says, "Well, I was trapped near the inner circle of thought." And Albert Brooks says, "I don't understand." Bob Diamond says, "I told you." So, what? Trapped near the inner circle of thought. The very existence of this inner circle of thought, which is illusory and insubstantial, is a trap. Thought is a trap. Because thought presumes the production of the material universe. You're not living in a material universe. You're dancing thoughts. Whose thought? Logoic thought. What is it? It's a dream. That's Maya. So while I don't think that the screenplay writer, who I think is Albert Brooks, I don't know if he had epistemological, genius in writing this line, the genius of knowing the nature of knowing, or knowing the unresolvability of the paradox of knowing, which goes to desire, of course, knowing and desire, subjectivity and thinking, which is a fashioning for knowing, and desire, which is a seeking. Those are all no-win conditions. They're all illusory. There's no winning in the illusory. There's just getting out of the illusory. Or there's no final, ultimate winning. There's temporary winning, yes. So there's no final release or freedom in the illusory. There's only the final release and freedom from the illusory. And so he says, I don't know Albert Brooks's, this sort of super high-level metaphysical epistemological thinker here, but some commonly humans channel or stuff comes through human mind that the human individual doesn't understand. Happens all the time. And so I'm not sure if he did or I'm just making this up, but this is what I see here, that this is a very profound statement, that while Albert Brooks is looking at his life to see how he met certain challenges where he'd either fall back into fear-based low self-value and a sort of self-sabotage, or rise to the occasion in confidence and magnanimity and be helpful and goodly to people. So while he was looking at that, the axis between low self-value and fear versus self-trust and magnanimity, Bob Diamond is looking at the issue or resolving the trap of the inner circle of thought. So the inner circle of thought is distinct from the outer circle of thought, if we want to look at it this way. One way to look at it is that there's an inner circle to thought, there's an outer circle to thought, or there's an inner and outer layer to the phenomenon of thought. You can say that the inner circle of mind is associated with the formation of thought. So there's the inner circle of mind, then there's the inner circle of thought, back to the root, the fundamentals by which thought is generated. I'd say that that's the inner circle of thought, although you could imagine it anyway. You can say it's just deep thought. But I would look at this as closer to the root by which the root from which thought arises. Thought, fourth skanda, sankhara, fashioning, fabrication, fermentation, volitional compound, thought form. Words, synonyms for the translations of the word sankhara, samskara, that is associated with thought. It's fabricated, it's fashioned, it's compounded, there's volition, there's desire. So thought intrinsically carries desire, meaning there's the desire to know, at least that. Thought as a response to phenomena which we seek to know. Why do we think anyway, right? I mean, some people can't stop thinking, but that's the monkey mind. But essentially, thought is a response to a perception of phenomena non-comprehended, right? It's an appellation or a labeling of phenomena or experience to make designation. It's a designator, right? Designator. So now we're talking about the roots of mind, where there's actually the generation of thought form as a response to the desire, presumably, it seems to me, the desire to comprehend an incomprehensible. But illusion is incomprehensible by its very nature. You can only comprehend illusion as illusion. Any comprehension is further illusion, actually. So all the five skandhas are considered, you know, anicca anatta, impermanent, insubstantial, and in some sense not real. Not real in the sense if only the eternal is real, because the impermanent is not only ever-changing, that which appears to be ever-changing is also ever-changing. So when something's ever-changing, it's all always changing or in flux. If something, is there a thing that's not in flux, or is there a thing in flux? It's flux in flux that we call a thing that's changing. So there's flux and phenomenal flux that changes. We call that a thing that's changing, and we say that that thing is insubstantial. But there's no thing there. There's just insubstantiality and flux. Mm-hmm. That's anicca anatta. And that's sunya, and that's the void, but that's the plenum. That's dancing thought, dancing satchit, in a sense, in the forms of light. There's no peace to that. There's no resolution to that. You're either there or you're not there. You either know it as a dream or you're living the dream.
Living the dream.
Yeah, living the dream. There's no waking up when you're dreaming. There's only ending dream. There's no final resolution in the dream to the dream other than waking up and no longer dreaming. Something like that. And I think Bob Diamond, you know, Albert Brooks, bless his heart, is somehow looking at or referencing the very trap of thought formation itself. The trap that all beings or beingness or light or Godhead or the apparent trap, the illusory trap of thought generation. That the inner circle of thought is the basis by which thought arises. The very need that calls forth, the very desire or craving that calls forth thinking is a trap. And either you're there or you're not there. And he wasn't yet finished with that, right? So he's trying to work his way out of sixth density, even though he's on the upper astral helping Albert Brooks with his life review. That's what it looks like to me. And so the inner circle of thought is a trap because not only do we believe it's substantial when it isn't, but we're seeking some kind of resolution of the unresolvable or some kind of reconciliation of a dream, of an illusion. There's no resolution of a dream other than waking up and no longer dreaming. Something like that. And to me, that's what the Noel was about as the answer to being in no win. Unknowability, non-resolvability, irreconcilability, unmeetable obligation, something that must be done that cannot be done. I want it, it can't be done. It's not simply desire unfulfilled. It's unfulfillability, it seemed to me. Because it wasn't just, you know, something I wanted, like I think about what? Some piece of knowledge I want and I can't understand it. Yeah, that's true, I have some of that in life. And some, you know, what am I going to wear today? Oh, but I don't have that problem. I wear the same types of pants all the time and it's no issue. And, you know, I have enough knowledge that I'm not, you know, deeply perplexed by confusion or something. I also realize the illusory nature of knowing. So that that puts a damper on the pain of not knowing, is to know that knowing itself is illusory because it's based on an illusory subjectivity. It's sort of like seeking to know you cannot know, but realizing what the awareness beyond a self that seeks to know, one knows without seeking knowing, or there is knowing without subject-object. Anyway, this is the end of healing. That's where healing goes, in some sense, is to the limit of knowing. The very arising of desire, the very arising of subjectivity that has desire, that seeks to resolve desire by thought and knowing. Finishing with all that is finishing with healing. And that's finishing with the octave. It's finishing with consciousness. Finishing the drama of consciousness. At some level, like Gautama on the last night, sitting through annihilatory dread, the dread associated with the annihilation of the empty or illusory sense of self or subjectivity. And this is sort of the unattainability of final fulfillment of desire by mind or with subjectivity. That essentially, the only way to win is not to play the game, as we see in the movie War Games. Just like that. You're not living in a material universe, therefore seeking some kind of terminal, permanent fulfillment of desire is not possible. Or even the fulfillment of obligations or meeting obligations. In a temporary way, partially, sure, we can, of course, and it's important. Do your danda. But in some bigger way, the work is ended with the realization that there's no work that needed to be done. There's a saying in Buddhism, the way to save the Mahayana Buddhism, but Bodhisattva, the way to save all beings, or in the salvation of all beings, the Bodhisattva realizes there never were any beings that needed to be saved. So saving all beings doesn't mean, giving a helping hand to trillions and uncountable lakh of entities. It actually is this realization that there are no beings bound to be saved. And that's back to some early Vedanta teaching. So, I think that's probably where I'll end the discussion of healing. perhaps what could be issues of final mind healing, the healing associated with the very belief that there is one to be healed, and the very seeking to heal itself is a wounding that needs to be healed. Or in the final healing, as far as I know, I'm not there, but I can imagine, the final healing is associated with a realization that there's never been any wounding to be healed. Your dancing thoughts, there's only been dancing thought. It's just a play. It's just a dream. But that is not any avoidance of pain. There's no playing games here. There's no avoiding any kind of bitterness or emotional pain. There's just some deep sense that there's no freedom in a dream. There's only freedom from a dream. There's no final release in the dream, but only from the dream. And within the dream, because it's a dream, taken as real, essentially trying to find a final peace or well-being is a no-win situation. It's an unmeetable obligation. It's a irreconcilable to reconcile in a dream. There's only the end of the dream. Something like that, if that makes any sense. So Bob Diamond at some point will no longer be trapped in the inner circle of thought, and then he won't be an advocate in Life Review either. But that's it for today. And that probably will be where I end the series on principles of self-healing here, freeing oneself, hopefully, from the inner circle of thought. So I hope this was useful. I hope it's inspiring. And we'll see what I do. Maybe take a break next week or pick up some selected topic. In any case, I hope that was helpful. I hope you're well. Take good care of yourselves, and good night.